that Monday. It happened on a Saturday. I was back at work that Monday, and I was telling my supervisor, like, hey, you know, we should be on the ground. You know, like, there are people out there need help. Maybe we could, you know, you could send some folks to just be out there on the ground. I didn't think that they would send a whole van and a mobile response team, but that's what they ended up doing. And we organized everything, was out on the ground immediately, set up tents. We worked with Better Family Life. We collaborated. And
Congressman, we have 30 seconds.
Yes, and it was a time when I was able to see what happens when people don't have access to true care, and what also happens when everybody doesn't feel safe in their community.
Well, your story is a truly remarkable one. You became the first African-American woman to represent Missouri in Congress, and you've written about it in this incredibly brave book, The Forerunner, A Story of Pain and Perseverance in America. Cori Bush, our guest. We thank you so much for being with us. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a video news production fellow and...
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
And good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Rowland. I'll be with you until 9 o'clock here on your community radio station. Are you a supporter of KBOO? Well, you know, you're not obligated to be to listen to this. The airwaves are free, after all. One of the few things. Of course, you know, you have to have a radio or some sort of device to listen to it on. And you got to have the time. But if you're listening right now, you do have the time, and hopefully you're a regular listener. And if you're a regular listener, you do appreciate what we offer you here on our community station. Anyway, I am just making an appeal to support this station. Go to kboo.fm, click on that old donate button if you are able. Whatever you can give, we appreciate. Keeps us going. We are moving towards getting ready to open up. We've got a whole bunch of equipment that we got here at a really good price, and we're going to be installing it. We're going to be, I guess we repainted the back room. I think we're going to be repainting the whole building and installing. We're going to just be just geared up and ready to roar into 2023 and whatever it may hold on this runaway train. Anyway, yeah, kboo.fm, support us, please. Eliza Gilkison, who you just heard. Has anybody expressed our current existential situation any better than that song? I urge you go to, you know, you can find the lyrics of just about any song on the internet. I mean, the internet is just it's just amazing. You can find just about everything there. Of course, there's a cost. All the energy that's used for the massive amounts of extra machines that have been introduced into this world. Let's not talk about the e-waste, but yeah, so there's a cost. My inbox is extraordinarily full, which, you know, that uses up energy. Anyway, I urge you to go to check out her lyrics for the song Runaway Train, Eliza Gilkison. Yeah, so proud of the engine, proud of the speed. Call for the porter, give them everything they need. Stare through the glass, feel no pain. Don't even know they're on a runaway train. Long after midnight, a pitiful few sound the alarm. Don't know what else to do. Banging on the doors of the cabin and crew. Hey, we gotta slow down or we won't make it through. Sleepy riders don't want to wake or suffer the shock when they put on the brake. Don't want to question, don't want to complain. Rather keep riding on this runaway train. That's just the last lines of the song. All right. Yeah, we are going to continue to talk about the runaway train. There's just so many intersecting runaway trains. You ever see that film? What's it called? About there is actually a runaway train, and then a couple guys get on a locomotive, and they're trying to catch up to the train and somehow hook on to it. Anyway, pretty good movie. Yeah, so what runaway train am I talking about? There's so many. Nuclear war games? Really? Are you serious? Playing nuclear war games? As if the supply chain breakdowns, the rising oil prices that are roiling this world and probably going to cost the Democrats the election. Duh. Smart move there, whoever aided and abetted this war in Ukraine. Of course, it's invading another country, country sovereignty. Yeah, got it. Get it. The United Nations should be a more effective place where these conflicts can be nipped in the bud, where you can actually force a negotiation of a war. But no, it's totally dysfunctional. But aside from all that, we could have stopped this war. There's all sorts of junctures, all sorts of warning signs. But no, we're still playing the games of the 20th century. Cold War games, power games, nation-state power games, the military-industrial complex games, all these games. And as the world is burning up, I mean, come on. Have you been outside? It's really, really, really scary. I got up yesterday morning. I thought it was all smoke. You know, is it better that it was smog, smoke, and fog? It just seemed rather apocalyptic. And it did smell bad, and it does smell bad, and it's not good for us. Can you imagine living out on the streets and having to breathe this, you know, all the other health problems that those people have? Yeah, so this is the future hitting us quick, smack in the face. See, I'm going to be talking about the runaway climate change. I've talked about it in many different perspectives. I've been focusing a lot on militarization and climate change. I'm going to be talking about the methane, surging methane, and read an article, recent article by Robert Hunsaker on Counterpunch, who are doing their own fundraising right now. So if you go to their website, you can find out all about that. I think they're one of the best websites for news and opinion that there is, personally. Okay, so yeah, what's happening right here locally before I get into the big picture? Last Saturday set new high temperature records in various locales around Oregon. This is from the Portland Tribune, by the way, pamplinmedia.com. There is one record truly noteworthy. Portland has never been this warm this late in the year. Records stretched back as far as 1940 at the Portland International Airport. Records were set all across northwest Oregon and southwest Washington on Saturday. Portland hit 87 degrees on October 15th, shattering the old record of 80 degrees set back in 2015. In Salem, the high of 92 shattered a record that went back 121 years to 1901. Looks like somebody's already calling. Give me a few more minutes, if you would. I'll put out the number just in a few minutes. More 80 degree weather is on the way. This is obviously from, I think it was Sunday or Monday of just a couple days ago. And of course, it was from Saturday. Air quality in the valley remain anyway. No significant rain is in the forecast. You know, we would have had 3.5 inches, I think, by now in October, and we've had virtually none. So yeah, I mean, you can see this as just sort of, oh yeah, this is this is the way things are going. But this is really, really, really serious. This is as bad as the 116 last summer. This incredibly long stretch, it was going on 3 months of like very, very almost no measurable rain. I mean, we're talking maybe like we had a tenth of an inch, we had a few hundredths of an inch, and of course, thank goodness it's supposed to end this weekend, finally, maybe douse some of those fires going on that are creating the smoke. That I think it's called the Nakia fire just up north of Camas, is it? That's kind of exploded over the weekend. Yeah, so looks like today should be the last smoky, hot, warm, unusually warm day before fall weather finally arrives here. I think the wind is supposed to shift this afternoon and hopefully clear it out. So we have that to look forward to. But the future's not looking bright. Okay, so I'm going to read this, so bear with me. This is from October 17, just a few days ago. Robert Hunsaker, one of the real troopers of journalism covering the issue of climate change. It looks like Lee's on the phone. Well, okay. Well, we'll hear what Lee has to say before I jump into this article, and then I really want to. You know, you're probably not going to sit through this whole thing and read this whole thing either. For whatever reason. Okay, go ahead, Lee.
Yeah. Well, everything I'm hearing is about how climate change is affecting humans, and what I'm not hearing is what climate change is doing to all the animals and plants with which we share this planet. I live east of Salem in the Sublimity area, and this year what has happened to the animals is just horrific. The deer have virtually no green forage because everything is dry. The birds, I don't know where they're getting their food. I don't see any nuthatches and chickadees anymore. We talk about the horrific example of what happened with Hurricane Ivan across Florida, and nobody's talking about the animals that had to withstand that storm totally unprotected.
Well, if you want to, if you want to get off on the subject of what we're doing and done, we one species among all the millions of species to. It's a vast subject that, you know, not just climate change, just the, you know, chemicals and loss of habitat, you know, I think 60% loss of all species or something like in the last, whatever, 68 years, the loss of bird life.
That was the first Earth Day. Put that into your head and
right.
Try and
well, the question is, it. The question is yes, it's a runaway train, as the song said. It's a dismal situation any way you look at it. My point of view has been, well, what the heck, is there anything to do about it? What is being done? Are any of those effective? If not, what is effective? And I came to the conclusion that what we really need to do, you know, if we want to talk about stopping this runaway train, you know, it's a vast techno system, vast techno industrial system that has got us all in its grip. And so it seems insurmountable. So I think we choose key lever points. And I identified, you know, the militarization as being sort of the driver and the biggest contributor to the problem and the biggest distorter of this whole of the social system, making us.
And I think it's a lack of fundamental morality that we completely eschew all our responsibilities to other species and to future generations.
Well, I think that's what they call idealistic, or you know, I think moralism is an idea. You know, there's materialistic and idealistic interpretations of history. I tend to lean towards the materialistic and see that there's actual. You know, there's actual institutional, you know, there's organizational things that have been set in place by our species that kind of lock us onto a path. And sure, our ideas, our morals, but you know, what is the so how do you influence the morality of people? And that's a, you know, it's as
you
difficult.
Live by example. You live by example, and you proselytize the message. That it's humans that have to change, and we have to change now.
Well, sure, but telling
people doesn't make any difference how we.
But
do it.
It's a power. It's a problem of power. You have to deal with the power problem. You can't just talk people out of it. You have to actually do things that force changes. You know.
The only thing I know of that will stop it is a general strike.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Well, thanks Lee. A general strike has to be organized, and it has to be implemented. So, you know, you're back to the same problem: is how do you actually move people? How do you organize people? You know, these are age-old questions. We're not going to solve it right here. But I want to talk about the methane surge. Disempower us perhaps even further. So, the title of my show is. The surging methane and rising temperatures, at least let's talk about it. So, you know, this is a talk show, so at least this is my pulpit, as it were. So this is what I'm going to talk about. I don't have any grand illusions that it actually changes everything, but I do think that we, you know, at least we can try to look at the truth of what's going on. And to me, whatever you focus on, you know, I could focus on the continual continual rapid expansion of the human footprint, as it were, the built environment, which is, you know, creating more and more and more space for humans and less space for everything else. You could focus on, I'm choosing to focus what on as I see the sort of the main destabilizing factor on the globe right now in terms of natural systems, which is climate change. You know, it's all, they're all intersecting, they're all exacerbating, they're all creating a perfect storm. I'm focusing right now on the issue of climate change because I see it as this just immense runaway train that's coming down really fast, and I just don't think we're really aware of how fast it's happening. I also have a really interesting article I want to kind of, it's an academic article. It's really hard to, I haven't absorbed it enough to give you all the fine points. I'll maybe read some of the headlines, called Perceptions of Time in Relation to Climate Change. I think it's a really important, if you want me to send you a copy of the link, I will give you the link. But I think it's, you know, for those of you who want to do a real deep dive, it's something I've been really struggling with, is this whole issue of time, because people say, oh, you know, we have 5 years, we have 10 years, we have 50 years, you know, it's too late, whatever. This article really lays out the psychological, sociological, physical factors in relation to time and climate change. All right, so let me just read this article as much as I can of this article by Robert Hunsaker called Surging Methane, just came out on Counterpunch. A mysterious uptick in atmospheric methane, CH4, was first detected 15 years ago. Of major concern, CH4 is a potent greenhouse gas that's 80 times greater than CO2. It's like a turbocharged booster heating up the planet. It is a climate change event that keeps scientists up at night, sleepless bouts of tossing, turning, sitting up, screaming on occasion. Quote, in the past few years, however, that uptick has accelerated into a surge. The implications for global warming are immense. That's from L. Hook and C. Campbell. Methane Hunter is what explains the surge in the potent greenhouse gas, from Financial Times of just this past August 22 of this year. Every year, chemists at the Global Monitoring Laboratory of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, Boulder, Colorado, receive roughly 6,000 flasks from 50 worldwide atmosphere monitoring stations. The lab measures levels of gases inside the samples, for example, carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and methane. Since 15 years ago, the lab's results have shown methane acceleration increasing year over year. As a result, since 2007, the scientific community has become increasingly concerned about levels of methane in the atmosphere. Its danger is triggering an unstoppable self-fulfilling cycle that ratchets up global warming way too fast, too quickly. That threat is already starting to bubble to the surface in thousands of thermokarst lakes, or melted permafrost lakes, that are rapidly spreading all across the high-latitude regions of the Northern Hemisphere. According to an article in Nature Communications by Katie Walter Anthony, professor of ecology and biogeochemistry at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, current climate models greatly underestimate the methane released by these lakes that are popping up like spring flowers all across the interior of Alaska. She believes that methane could become the dominant source of atmospheric warming. It's on a fast track guided by nature's own course as it reacts to global warming. A plane flight across Alaska finds mile after mile after mile of newly formed thermokarst lakes bubbling up methane. Anthony claims lakes emit methane 10 times more than a normal lake. In her words, they are hot spots. According to Sir David King, former chief scientific advisor for the UK and founder of the Climate Crisis Advisory Group, with the Arctic having warmed 3 degrees centigrade, well above the global average, risks are also growing that large amounts of methane trapped in thawing permafrost could be released. If all of that is released, we'll see temperatures rise 5 to 8 degrees centigrade, 8 to 14 Fahrenheit, over 20 years. Extraordinarily destructive to the future of humanity. It is only too obvious that surging methane is a major risk to society at large. It is widely acknowledged that a rise of 5 to 8 degrees centigrade global warming most likely spells death warrant. A potential solution to excessive levels of methane is discussed in more detail at the end of this article, which is a group of scientists and engineers under the banner Atmospheric Methane Removal AG, Switzerland. Quote, atmospheric methane had its highest growth rate ever recorded by modern instruments in 2020, and then that record was broken again in 2021. No one knows exactly why. Again, that's the Hook and Campbell methane hunters, what explains a surge in the potent greenhouse gas in Financial Times. However, after years of research, scientists have identified the distinguishing fact that fossil sources of methane contain more carbon-13 isotope than do microbial sources like wetlands, cattle, and landfills. As such, that evidence has exposed a major concern for the scientific community. That is, since 2007, it has become quite obvious that the worst possible case may be underway. Quote, the planet itself could be emitting more methane, and it is not slowing down. According to Ed Dlugokhenki, a chemist at the NOAA lab, after 200 years of increasing, all of a sudden we start to see a decrease in delta carbon-13. That means something significant has happened. As such, horror of horrors, if Dlugokhenki's significant change proves to be the, quote, methane bomb, meaning the planet warming itself, thereby causing more methane released in the atmosphere in a terrifying feedback loop, without human influence at this point, then how to stop it? In the vernacular, at least, the ultimate threat called runaway global warming. If you think of fossil fuel emissions as putting the world on a slow boil, methane is a blowtorch that is cooking us today, according to Durwood Zelke, Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development. There are plenty of professionals like Zelke that are extremely concerned about the prospects of the methane bomb, which could wipe out civilization unless it can be stopped. In that regard, the UN Environment Program claims that existing technologies, not yet proven as operational, could cut methane emissions by 45% by 2030. In turn, this would avoid 0.3 degrees centigrade of additional warming. Anyway, then he goes on to this whole idea of let me just read a little more. We're almost halfway through. According to Atmospheric Methane Removal AG is one strong prospective source for cutting methane emissions. It's an engineering company that is science-driven. Its technology is designed to help, quote, cool planet Earth. So, yeah, there are, you know, there's there's a few people who've taken it to the sort of entrepreneurial level, who've actually formed companies that are doing research and development on, you know, everything from, you know, artificial trees or various ways to suck carbon out of the atmosphere geoengineering, putting reflective like aluminum-based particles in the atmosphere to reflect sunlight back, to, you know, seeding iron in the oceans to encourage plankton growth, but, you know, even there, we're still spending the vast majority of the global budgets on the military and not on research and development, you know, urgent research, deployment of resources towards these sort of technologies. Because, you know, years ago I had Paul Beckwith on, a expert on, he was then a graduate student, I'm sure he's got his degree now, but his specialty was actually rapid global warming. And he had this three-legged stool. One, you know, stop producing so much carbon, keep it in the ground, transition to renewables, et cetera. Two, is actually taking carbon out of the atmosphere. And three is actually, you know, stopping the radiation forcing, you know, through, you know, increasing the albedo effect, you know, which is the reflective capacity of ice and snow to, as I said, to, you know, elements in the atmosphere that reflect radiation back. He and many others believe it's actually too late to just keep it in the ground, which is the main thrust of the climate movement. And, you know, God bless them, I've been part of that. That's you know, it seems like that's an obvious thing we have to do. But, you know, this runaway train is just so vast and has got us so much in its thrall. You know, the whole industrial technosphere, the, you know, society, the spectacle, the sort of illusions created by the technosphere through mass entertainment, through the internet, through everything, keeps us all, you know, all using energy and using being involved in the technosphere instead of getting out of it. You know, austerity and neoliberalism continuing the capitalist project, you know, against the challenges to it that arose in the 20th century, et cetera, et cetera. It's a multifaceted situation. Anyway, so yeah, so the you know, because people don't want to, you know, the idea of geoengineering has so many risks. It's so experimental, so untried. It's going to have obviously so many side effects that could be worse than the benefits of it. That, yeah, I can see why there's a great reluctance to it. I just, the crucial factor is the time that I think people just aren't really focusing on. And it's, you know, it's hard. It's probably hard for people to listen to this discussion of methane, the discussion of the possibility that we might be entering into a runaway climate change scenario. Yeah, it's hard. You know, maybe people just turned off the radio. You know, they've got, you know, better things to occupy your day with, no doubt. But as someone who's really would like to continue the advanced ecosystem life on planet Earth, including our species, and sees some really serious risks, we have to take these things into very seriously. So if you are one of those people who is continuing to listen and taking these things seriously, I would like to hear from you at 503-231-8187. Okay, so what does this atmospheric methane removal do? It utilizes enhanced atmospheric methane oxidation via iron salt aerosol, a natural chemical reaction, in order to deplete methane from the atmosphere. This process is similar to the same chemical reaction accomplished by the sun interacting with natural iron salt aerosols emitted by the planet, except EAMO accelerates the process fast enough to make a big difference in methane's impact quickly. The sun takes much, much longer, maybe a decade or more, for the same impact of nature taking its own course. And you can read this whole thing again on Counterpunch, Robert Hunsaker, Surging Methane, from just a few days ago, October 17. You can get the details on what these processes are if you want to find out more about it. But again, the problem is we're just, you know, we're still playing the old games of nation-state power, dominance, militarization, social status, and power. We're still playing all those games because that's what we're locked into. That's what our social systems have got us locked into. You know, our social systems, once upon a time, were different. They had different, people were playing different games. How and why we got locked on this trajectory is subject for much discussion and debate. I've talked about it a little bit. At this point, I don't know, is it moot? You know, can we re-engineer? Can we re-socialize ourselves as Lee was talking about, essentially, is, you know, change our moral compass points, our morality? It's an institution. These are institutional problems, and they're entrenched. You know, I talked about, I got on my high horse of, you know, the problem of militarization, given, you know, that militarization got us on this course of colonialism, empire, and capitalism. It's kept us on that course. It drives the technological innovation, which produced this massive amount of machines that we're using that burn fossil fuels on an accelerated rate. It continues to produce these international conflicts and tensions, which prevent us from coming together and solving problems. Well, that's about enough for me. Let's see who we got Looks like Robbie wants to talk to us again. Go ahead, Robbie.
Yeah, good morning. I'm very interested into geoengineering, and I was actually very excited when you brought up the, not excited is kind of the wrong word, but I did want to point some information in case you hadn't heard of it, but there has been the geoengineering experiment with fertilizing the ocean with iron.
I mentioned that in passing at the beginning, yeah.
Right. He dropped like 120 tons of iron into the ocean in a very controversial experiment in 2012. And it actually, I think there's a, I was trying to find the science article on it, but it was talking about, it's interesting because this guy did it as like a rogue thing. And then there was actually the effects that came out of it that they're witnessing that the ocean is now creating that algae from dumping iron in it. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up is this bio. There's a really great website called geoengineeringmonitor.org, and it's basically watching all of this geoengineering, and there is a lot of problems with it because along with the cloud seeding that the United Arab Emirates is now doing because of our technology, I say our, America selling the cloud seeding technology to Saudi Arabia, there are going to be what is known as, you know, blowback, I guess, where they're taking atmospheric condensation from one area and taking it out of that area and putting it into their own. So there is,
well, of course, if you plug into all these, any of these things into the nation state competition and warfare and economic self-interest, et cetera, you're just going to keep getting the same results. That if anything is going to, you know, there has to be international cooperation, just like there has to be international cooperation for demilitarization. There has to be international cooperation for the research and development into and deployment of any of these technologies. That's the only way to go. And of course, we're not going there.
Right. Yeah, it's all for profit. Which is what's leading this geoengineering, which is why it's so bad, is because what they're doing is they're doing it for industry first. They're trying to protect assets. So here's the thing. We got to be clear about this, but I feel like the last couple years, maybe decade or more, I've been that person that's like, look at the chemtrails, look at that. And those are what is known as geoengineering.
I just don't see it, Robbie. The chemtrails is a canard to me. It's a canard. It's been debunked repeatedly.
What's been debunked about it?
They don't exist. It's not happening.
That's how they cloud seed.
Well, anyway, we could go around and around and around on this.
I'm serious. That's how they implement the cloud seeding and how that was their.
Yeah, but the photos that are on that website, these have been demonstrated to generally be much more benign. Just actual, you know, the way that the jet trails, just normal jet trails from jets, act in certain meteorological conditions.
That's called contrails. There's a difference. Contrails disappear shortly behind them.
Not always. They sometimes last in time, and that's where a lot of those photographs that people use to buttress their arguments.
I'm not here to try to argue. I'm here to try to provide information. If you don't know how they implement cloud seeding, have you seen cloud seeding done before?
No, but again, we're not going to get anywhere.
So then let's leave it at that, because I have.
Okay, fair enough. Well, people can...
I mean, look it up. It's on Wikipedia. It shows you how they cloud seed.
Right, but that doesn't mean it's as widespread as people... Sure, I believe that cloud seeding technologies exist, and I believe that some people are implementing. I think my feeling is it's not nearly as large scale as some people want to make people believe. But anyway, people can make up their own mind.
You cut me off here. I wasn't even able to bring up what I was trying to bring up, and you said that it's been disproven, and I'm looking on my phone right now how they cloud seed, and it's literally a plane flying in the air, they turn a button on, and it leaves the trail behind it, and that's how they cloud seed.
Right, but I'm saying that there's this idea that it's a massive UN conspiracy, you know,
What are you talking about? I never said UN.
Well, I'm just saying that's what is on.
You're putting words in my mouth.
I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm saying that's what I've seen on the internet has been that, And so, I don't.
Okay, let me. This is exactly why this is a big problem, because for the last 15 years, I have arguments with people on the right side, people who are Republicans who don't believe in climate change, and they're using facts. They're using logistical models to say, hey, look, if pollution was causing climate change, then why is this happening? And I go directly to geoengineering, which is causing this data to be wrong. And it's funny because I dig into it, and what I see is the left and the right just arguing. The left, oh, that's all not real, or of course climate change is real, and this. And then I go to the right side, and I'm like, okay, well, and then they're using this, but you can't even talk to people on the right side. But I engage with them, I read their data, and then I'm able to be like, okay, well, look, there's this NAWMC.org. That's the North American Weather Modification Council. NAWMC.org. It tells you how many projects are in the air currently. It tells you what cloud seeding is. It tells you how it's done. There's a different method.
Okay, so, well, like, okay, that's a useful link. We got to leave it there because we have other callers. Did you want to make one last point?
I'll make one last point. I don't know. It's just disappointing that, like, you're so opposed to new information when I'm here trying to share stuff that can help you form your own arguments with people on the other side. I mean, I think the more if we knew, like, okay, because you said that they were releasing stuff to reflect back into the atmosphere, right? That was under the Obama administration, and the military implemented it. The only reason I know this is because there was a Republican senator who found out that they were spending like $100 or $300 million to fight climate change in the military, and he threw a stink about it. That's how I found out.
Okay. So what I came across, and this is, you know, some time ago, was this idea that there's this massive project it's not cloud seeding. It was putting into the atmosphere through these military jets or even commercial jets, these particles of aluminum or whatever it is, reflective particles. And that's what these chemtrails were. That was like the dominant piece of information that was going out. And that was actually causing climate change and all these other things. And that was this massive, seemed like a massive disinformation campaign. So,
because we're not actually educated on what they're doing. And what they're doing is protecting the assets of the American economy through the geoengineering.
Okay, so I'll let people go to that website, NAWMC.org. That's a useful piece of information, and I appreciate
it. There's also geoengineeringmonitor.org.
Okay, thank you, Robbie. Always stimulating.
Anyway, thank you.
Okay. geoengineeringmonitor.org. Okay, so I guess my resistance also to this stuff, and I was totally wrong in being resistant, is that I was always more focused on how do we actually organize people to, you know, stop the producing and using fossil fuels in order to, you know, slow down this climate change behemoth. Like I shared that perspective with a large part of the climate movement, I believe. And maybe there is a resistance towards, I'll have to look into this stuff more thoroughly. I know Robbie often challenges me, and I know don't always follow up. But anyway, we got other callers. Looks like Jeff is on deck. Are you still there?
Yes, I sure am. Hey, so I'm an old guy. I don't usually waste my time trying to school young pups like yourself up about these things, but I'm an Air Force veteran. I know the weather, and I know about jet engines. And I'll tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, chemtrails were developed for mitigating the effects of global warming, and they've been doing it for at least 30 years. And the thing that I
have a problem with that is there are a lot of different organizations.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to cut you off right now because the White House has just come out and given, I think it's $4 million to assess the feasibility of spraying particulate matter to mitigate global warming.
Well, fine, but $4 million is nothing. $4 million is zero.
Yeah. They used to use military aircraft to do it. They don't use military aircraft anymore. They use commercial jets, and that's why.
Okay, so how widespread is this?
Wait a minute. Half of the cargo space on most commercial jets, the cargo space is.
Yeah, well, that we can see where that person was coming from, because he just swore at me with a word that can't go out on the air, which is why you didn't hear the last part of what he said. So, I don't know. I probably shouldn't have got into all this, because that's the kind of call we're going to get. Let's get somebody else on the line. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. We're talking about serious questions here. The idea that it proves it that there's now an allocation for $4 million, which is almost nothing. It's a pitiful amount if we're talking about actually changing the course of this climate juggernaut. That proves it has been going on for 30 years. I mean, that's just ludicrous. I'm sorry. I'm prepared to be proven wrong. I'd like to see some real evidence. There's all these whistleblowers. There's all these really good investigative journalists, that cover climate change, that cover this and that. The idea that this has been going on a massive level for that long and nothing has come out about it, like officially, formally, and like a real, either a peer-reviewed journal article or a legitimate media source. Legitimate. I mean, that's ridiculous. There's many, many legitimate. I don't mean to put the mainstream media up on a pedestal, but, it would break there too. Okay, so that's what I have to say on that. And the fact that my caller swore at me in a very vicious way, I think that shows where they're coming from. I could be wrong. As Robbie says, there are, a lot of people who... It's a very emotional issue. It's a very charged issue. As the desperation mounts with the rising temperatures and the massive dislocating, destabilizing effects of bigger and bigger storms, of hotter and hotter heat waves. I mean, 116 degrees. Was that scary or was that scary? That scared the heebie-jeebies out of me last year. I've been feeling this. I feel like we're acclimatized to having a change of seasons wherever we live. I've been feeling like with that, those abnormally, we're talking 10 to 15 to 20 degrees above the norm, which we've been having for several weeks now, that I just felt overheated in my own house. It's like there should have been this change of temperature and it didn't happen. And I just felt, I've been feeling all discombobulated. My stomach, my body has been rebelling against it. Am I imagining that? I don't know. Well, let's see what Harry has to say. Go ahead. You're on the air, Harry. Are you there? One of our usual callers. I'd love to hear, just before you go, Harry, I'd love to hear people who haven't called in, who don't regularly call in. I welcome all our regular callers, but 503-231-8187. You only have a little over 10 minutes. What do you got to say today, Harry?
Oh, okay. About methane. A few years ago, they were talking about these methane lakes, but they were all in Russia, and it just dawned on me that wait a minute, Russia borders the Arctic Ocean, and so does Alaska, and so does Canada, and this is the first time they've ever mentioned that we have these methane lakes. Canada probably has these methane lakes, and the other countries that border the Arctic Ocean. So I was just kind of concerned that, hey, this has been going on for some time now, these methane lakes. And what do we do about methane? I mean, the oil companies, when they're drilling, they release a lot of it. In fact, they get rid of it by flaming it. And they have no... It's like instead of capturing and saving it for energy purposes, they just set it on fire and flame it.
It's because the profit model dictates that they do things in the most expedient, quickest, less cost-intensive way possible. And all these things require re-gearing, investing in new technologies, you know, like just like a carbon capture from, you know, a smokestack, just like a any kind of filtration system, any kind of abatement. It all costs money. And these things, the, you know, there's this cutthroat capitalist system that requires people to maximize their profit at all others' expense and turn it around in the shortest term as possible. And that's what we're running on. And that's, you know, and so any, you know, and there's a this massive neoliberal backlash against, you know, pollution control, against the welfare state, against anything that minimizes, you know, that maximizes the social benefits and tends to lessen the profit rate. There's been this massive backlash for decades now. And then now we've got these authoritarian right-wing regimes that want to turn it back even further, like the Trump regime wanted to, you know, dismantle all the regulatory agencies. It's a very difficult situation, let us say.
Okay, thank you very much. I just wanted to bring up that that issue. We do have a major issue with methane. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you talked about the issue we have with carbon dioxide that comes from the drilling and everything else, and what to do about it. Well, they put it in pipes and ship it someplace else, and, well, anyway,
again, yeah, that requires a massive reinvestment, just like everything else. That it's the same problem all across the board. We're talking about a complete shift in the economic model, you know. Anyway, thanks for calling, Harry. 503-231-8187. Looks like we got couple more callers. We got Cassie. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. I haven't called before, but I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo.
You gotta turn down your radio.
Okay,
well, go ahead.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. I remember before the before the COVID, I'm at TriMet stops a lot because that's how I get my transportation. I'd look up and I'd see these certain specific cloud designs. And so I start taking photos, and sometimes it just overwhelms the skies. And so I have like dozens of those photos. And then when I really got concerned was when I was watching TV or so or something, and it was a pretty old show. It must have been 20 years old. And I saw the same exact patterns in the film. Anyway,
right. So, can you? What do those patterns represent now?
You can see the airplanes going by, and I call them chemtrails.
Okay. So, like can you trace a direct line between those lines in the sky and a specific program that is operational that's doing that?
I don't know any program. No,
well, okay, so there's, well, yeah, but observations, there could be many explanations for that. And I put out that there's actually meteorological conditions that make those contrails, that every airplane creates a contrail, which is mostly water vapor. And it's in certain meteorological conditions, they last longer than in other conditions. So that's just a naturalistic or whatever. That's an explanation that doesn't involve some sort of massive conspiracy of, you know, a program that's creating these chemtrails. So anyway, I got to let you go.
Wow. Well, really?
Yeah. Really?
Oh my gosh. Robbie's put a lot into this, and I'm really sorry that you're taking his information like you are. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Well, if someone can give me some specific, that's not what Robbie was saying. He wasn't saying, anyway, we can go off on into a really deep hole with this, and I prefer not to. If someone can actually give me some really good investigative reporting that ties a specific program to that's supposedly making these chemtrails that are actually an existing program for reflecting radiation, which is solar radiation was actually that's been the argument. Anyway, okay, let's hear what Lon has to say, and he might be our last caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay, hi, Paul. I got one sentence to tell you. For the Earth to live, capitalism must die. It's that simple.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's been one of my theme songs over the years, is Norbert and the, oh God, I can't remember, Dan Burt No Bacon, his band, the former Chumbawamba Star, has basically that's the name of a song of his. Anyway, we're running out of time. Looks like we do have a little more time for another caller, 503-231-8187. Yeah, I mean, I prefer to focus on, you know, these are really difficult things to tease out, and I am probably not the best person for it. And I apologize to my last caller if you thought I was being overly short with you. But again, you know, we need to provable things. You know, what I believe Robbie was talking about was a program for programs for cloud seeding, which do exist. I don't believe he was saying that this idea of these massive amounts of chemtrails that are some sort of a secret program that's been going on. That I just don't agree with. Looks like we lost that caller. Okay, so I've been talking about an article here. Let me just read, since Harry brought up other places other than Siberia. This is an article just came out September 22nd in NASA, on NASA. Alaska's newest lakes are belching methane, by Sophie Bates. This lake wasn't here 50 years ago. Katie Walter Anthony, ecologist for the at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, dips her paddle into the water as her kayak glides across the lake. Years ago, the ground was about 3 meters taller, and it was a spruce forest, she says. Anyway, looks like we do have a couple callers, so let's go really quickly to our next caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, in reference to the person who was talking about the contrails, actually, Dennis Kucinich was the first person to use the term chemtrails, and he was silenced. I recommend that people go to Dane Whittington's site, geoengineering.org, and he is at the helm of research on the subject. And I think you should too, so you can be up.
So, what do you think? Do you think capitalism is like the driving force for all this?
I don't know. It has do with weather manipulation and weather warfare.
Well, you see, if people refuse,
capitalism is the most demonic force on the planet. Yes, I agree.
Okay. Well, I hope you're not just saying that to please me, because I think people. I have a tendency. Most people who go off on this geoengineering thing do seem to be right-wingers from my experience. So, and there does seem to be a denial of reality involved. And I'm not saying any of you who called in, I'm sorry if I was short with you. I didn't expect that many people to be interested in that particular aspect of it, because there's so many different aspects. I think if we only focus on this idea of chemtrails, I think we're really losing the main... what's really important here, which is that it's a vast technological system that's pumping out greenhouse gases at a massive rate that has caused this accelerating global warming, which has now kicked off feedback loops within natural systems, including the releasing of methane from permafrost, from the ocean seabed, from various sources. That's one of the major feedback loops that's leading into even further accelerated global warming. Now, whether or not the specific program of chemtrails to what extent exists, that's one facet among a very multifaceted. I just think we shouldn't go too far down that path and ignore all the others. But we are out of time, so I'm sorry to my next and last caller who's waiting. We can't hear from you because we're at the end of the show. Let me just finish this. Big Trail Lake is a thermokarst lake, which means it formed due to permafrost thaw. Permafrost is ground that stays frozen year-round. The permafrost in interior Alaska also has massive wedges of actual ice locked within the frozen ground. When that ice melts, the ground surface collapses and forms a sinkhole that can fill with water, thus a thermokarst lake is born. And that's what I was talking about from the article by Hunsaker and this article here. But I got to leave it there. So thanks everybody who called. And we'll continue this discussion at a later date. I'm Paul Rowland. Thanks for listening. Bye, everybody. Shoveling coal, all singing a sad